Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Fresh Voices, the podcast where we discuss the current week's Voices pieces. My name is Julia Pinney, and I'm an assistant Voices editor. I'm here today with Mika, who wrote an awesome piece this week called Friendship Send Failure. It's about the lack of connection she finds in her college life today. Mika, would you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, hi. So I'm Mika. I'm a sophomore in the college, majoring in linguistics, though I'm currently trying to create my own major around generational studies. I'm from Los Angeles, and I live in Copley, which we will explore in depth with this podcast.
So I loved your piece, and I think that so many people will be able to connect with it. Personally, it brought me straight back to the beginning of first semester, coming back for sophomore year, and I was ready to find my people, you know, that elusive cluster of individuals that I hadn't quite found freshman year. But as you said in your piece, it was a lot easier to meet people and to make friends last year when we weren't also encased in our social armor. Would you explain this social armor that you write about?
Right. So what I was really referring to was this idea that in high school we have, or a lot of us have our friends already established. And I kind of view this as armor because, at least in my experience, we would travel together, you know, the classic go to the bathroom together, eat lunch together. So you weren't always alone. You had your group or your squad, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. But once you get to college, no one really knows each other. So you're completely alone and you have to brave the campus without this armor. So basically, yeah, Emotionally and socially naked.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel that this kind of emotional and social aloneness and conquering life alone has been something that many people around you feel?
Around me at college or just... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's kind of this unspoken thing that a lot of us struggle with. You know, we have friends and we go through our lives in our clubs and in our classes, and we don't really discuss this a lot. I think it's something that needs to be talked about more. It's just this idea that, you know, it's not so much about loneliness as it is just connecting with strangers. Mm-hmm. For me.
Yeah. So I know that that theme comes up a lot in what you talk about in your dorm. I loved the image of your dorm as the hallway from The Shining, and how, for all you know, that there's a centaur living in one room and your best friend living in another room and potentially a student robot living in another room, but you wouldn't know. So would you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So I know that the setup of college makes it so that we can't get to know everyone, obviously. I understand that. And we're all so busy, but I found that every time I would just go down the hall to get some water, because the water fountain is at the end of my hall, I would pass the doors around me, and I would just think, you know, who are these people? Like, who am I sharing a space with, and what are their stories? And there are so many lives to be explored and people to meet, but I can't access them, because that would be strange if I were to go around and try mm-hmm. to get to know people. And, you know, in the common room, I know we're going to discuss this later, but if I were to strike up a conversation with someone I don't know in the common room at this point as a sophomore, there is a little bit of a social stigma around that.
Yeah. So why do you think that it was easier to observe other people's lives in passing and kind of see these small doses of humanness in your freshman dorm? Why do you think that it's harder now as a sophomore to get that?
I mean, physically, the doors were open a lot of times in my freshman floor. So I just, because of that, I got to see what people were doing. And now people close their doors. I don't really get to see into any people's rooms. But it's also just this idea that, you know, people, because they already have their friends established as early as freshman year, they're less likely to be more open and friendly as sophomores. Mm-hmm. So the floor has this kind of coldness to it.
Okay. So it sounds like it's almost as if the common room is not this kind of opening, welcoming space, because people almost don't feel the need to go into the common room. They don't feel the need to meet more people. Do you feel like that's true?
Right. I think for me, freshman year, my common room was just this hub of social activity, people going in and out into the late hours of the night. We would always play this game called Exploding Kittens. Mm-hmm. And Egyptian rat slap on the floor. We would get really loud, and someone would be in the corner baking cookies, you know, and then share with everyone. And we would just, there would be a lot of other groups going on in the corner, maybe having a discussion of their own. But it was just, it was warm, and it was, it felt like more of a home, as I talk about in the article.
Okay. And so one paragraph of your piece that I just wanted to keep going on and on and on and really wanted to ask you more about was the paragraph about technology. You say that these technologies like Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram make us victims, not villains. What do you mean by that?
Well, that line was in reference to the anecdote I told about a girl who I happened to notice in an elevator. I happened to notice her ignore this joke that an older, I think he was an auditor maybe, he made a joke and she ignored him, basically. And in that moment, I felt really frustrated with her, very angry that she is my age and she's part of my generation and she's kind of making us look bad mm-hmm. to this older man who's just trying to be friendly. So after I felt all this rage towards her, thinking that she was representative of our entire generation. I realized that maybe I shouldn't be so mad at her because she's just a product of her environment, and she, she, like everyone else, basically was handed a phone, probably by their parents at a certain age, or she asked for a phone,
mm-hmm.
and she thereafter was ingrained with this kind of routine of always checking your phone, always being on it. So she's really not, this is not her way of being intentionally cold. I think it's just her, it's her growing up with the phone and with that kind of mindset.
Yeah.
So that line, technology makes us victims, not villains, mm-hmm. is what I was talking about. It's something that we should be mourning over and commiserating with each other over, rather than being angry at each other.
Okay. Do you feel that that girl sitting in the elevator, I know in your piece you talk a lot about how you can kind of connect with her in a lot of ways. Do you feel like our technology is a way of hiding? It kind of comes from a place of fear and not wanting to show vulnerability?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the best example, aside from this elevator, I can give is The Walk by Arupe, where everyone is kind of, busily walking to and from class, trying to get to places, but this walk is designed in such a way that you kind of have to look at your peers or the people walking in front of you. But I've noticed, I've actually done this little social experiment where I purposely make eye contact with people walking towards me, and they either look away, they look down at their phone, they're already looking at their phones, and pretty much everyone that passes me does that. So I just feel like there's this disconnect going on around us.
Yeah, like even just the 5-minute walk in between classes, I notice in my walking, I'll see people with headphones in, and I'm all for listening to music. I love music. I love podcasts. But it does strike me as sometimes, it does strike me as strange that sometimes I'll pass by someone and try to say hi to them, like a good friend of mine, and they will not acknowledge my presence. And I know that it's nothing personal to me. It's just that they simply can't hear me. And I feel like that is such a sad thing, because it's such a moment it's just such a moment of like ripe with the potential to have a connection with someone. And that's, I feel like, all we all want in life is just to make a connection.
Exactly. And I'm guilty too of walking to class with my headphones in and kind of avoiding people if I'm having an off day. But when this is a regular occurrence, I think it also trains people to do the same. So when I go down that walk and I see people avoiding eye contact, kind of looking down, looking at their phones if they're uncomfortable, it makes me do the same because I am trained every day not to engage with people.
Mm-hmm. I think another really interesting place that phones come into play is in class, specifically the beginning and the end of class. I think in your article, it's really fascinating how you bring up your parents, and I'd love to hear more about your parents' experiences in college. Because personally, when I talk to my parents, something they don't understand when I try to tell them about how difficult it can be to make friends is they'll say, hey, well, what about those few minutes at the beginning of your class or those few minutes at the end of your class when you're packing up your backpack? Can't you just, you know, say hi to someone, invite them to lunch? And I look at them and realize that they just don't understand, and they never will, how phones have changed our lives. Because I walk into a classroom and everyone's spending those kind of 5-7 minutes before the professor walks in, replying to texts, replying to Snapchats, checking their Facebook feed, checking their Instagram feed, replying to emails. The professor walks in, they hopefully put away their phone, usually they do. And then the second the professor says, great, see you Monday, the phone whips right out again. And the sheer amount of boldness and effort it takes to break someone away from that screen and ask them to have lunch, to be able to connect with someone, is sometimes too insurmountable of a barrier. Is that something you've experienced?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I feel like it's a little bit disturbing that our phones are kind of, they puncture our days. So, for example, we go to bed looking at our phones. That's the last thing I look at. I'm sure a lot of people do. It's the first thing I look at when I wake up. And like you said, it's the first thing people look at after class ends. And they'll actually leave the classroom continuing to look at their phone. So again, I know what you mean. There's this kind of roadblock to making friends or just making connections or even just smiling with the people around you because there's this screen that's kind of a literal wall in mm-hmm. front of us.
Yeah. How do you think your experience has been different from your parents' college experience, just in general and based off of the introduction of technology into our lives?
Well, I first noticed something was different when my sister actually went off to college. And
how old's your sister?
She's currently 21. But when she was first, when she was a freshman in college, my parents visited her and they noticed that something was off with her school. They thought it was her school because mm-hmm. no one was going out on a Friday night in terms of the dorm. Like, no one was leaving their dorms. All the doors were closed. It was basically a ghost town. And they were wondering why that was, and they blamed it on the school. But I later realized that it was actually the fact that Netflix exists.
Okay.
So we can just stay in our rooms and be entertained as long as we want. Without needing to kind of venture out and make friends or just kind of satisfy that, like, social need that we have as creatures that need companionship and friends. So now that I'm a sophomore, I've kind of understood that a lot of basically the way that my college experience has gone so far really is different from their experience, I think, because of technology. And I mentioned in the article a couple examples. When you go to the dining hall and you're waiting for your friends to come, you can look at your phone and until they arrive so that you don't really look like you're waiting for anyone. You can look like you're busy. And people will kind of take that as a sign not to interact with you because you're clearly engaged in something. Whereas I think when my parents went to the dining hall and they were waiting for friends, or they just, you know, went there hoping to see someone they knew to eat with, they didn't have that armor. So they would have to interact with people, and it would force people to engage in dialogue and connect with each other. So that's just one example.
Yeah, I think I'm so happy that you brought up going to the dining hall, because that's another place that my parents say, oh, you could just go sit with someone at the dining hall. And I kind of look at them like they're crazy, because it's really not that simple, especially when you become a sophomore. It's so interesting when you're a freshman, that first week, new student orientation, everyone's kind of sitting there a little shell-shocked, kind of trying to figure out who they're going to sit with. And so it's a lot easier to just kind of go and sit with some nice-looking people. I remember one time, first week of freshman year, I went and sat with a nice group of girls at breakfast and didn't realize until halfway through breakfast that they were the women's crew team. And they kind of looked at me and were wondering, Julia, like, it's so nice to meet you, but do you want to walk onto the crew team? And I said, no, you just look like a nice group of girls, and I just thought I'd sit with you. And they're like, oh, okay. I wouldn't think to do that now. I wouldn't think to just
sit with someone random. No, you'd be kind of labeled as a social pariah.
Yeah.
But yeah, beyond college, too, I think I've noticed these differences. Like, my mom will make friends in public transportation, and we'll get off a plane and she'll have made a couple friends.
My mom does the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It could just be our moms being friendly and being moms.
Yeah.
Or it could be the fact that they don't rely on technology to keep them looking busy.
I think it's in the dining hall. It's interesting how Netflix has become a surrogate to dinner companions of, if you don't have someone to have dinner with, well, you have Netflix. And
right.
That can be okay. So I guess the question that I'd like to end with is, do you think there's hope for fostering connection in our world today?
I don't have much hope, but I do have a silver lining that I discuss at the end of my piece. And that's, I think, if you're looking for other people to be vulnerable so that you can also share your vulnerability, I think it is still present in people today. It's just a little harder to look for because of screens and closed doors, as I say in the paragraph. So I think people still have this inclination to make connections and to be present with each other. They just tend to fall victim to technology and how ubiquitous it is. So I think all it really takes is just looking harder for this kind of vulnerability.
Thanks so much for talking to me, Mika. Can you tell us where to find you on social media?
I'm only on Facebook, but you can hit me up via Yahoo Mail or Gmail.
Great. I'm also on Facebook as Julia Pinney, and my Instagram is Julia_Pinney. I'm not much of a Twitter person. Before we go, I'd like to thank bensound.com for our music and give Gustav and Parker, our stellar podcast editing team, a shout out. I hope you'll tune in to our next installment of Fresh Voices next week. And be sure to check out Mika's piece in the newest issue of The Voice in print. Thanks for listening.